I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. Hello and welcome to the bonus episode of season 6. I didn't feel ready to say goodbye just yet to this season. I have had such an amazing experience with it. It started during lockdown. I was doing my interviews over the phone. But I think this season I had some really, really important conversations that were very special to me and I learned so much. And topping it off with my conversation with Rosanna last week about everything that she's been through over the last couple of years. So I will remember season 6 very, very fondly. And I wanted to come on today, number one, to bring you a conversation I had with Corona's frontman, Danny O'Reilly, who is a friend of mine. I can't wait for you to hear that. But also to announce some exciting news. So I am launching a new podcast series called The Good Glow Health on August 17th. I have been dying to tell you all about the Good Glow Health. So don't worry, the Good Glow will still continue season seven. Oh my God, time flies. Season 7 will be released later this year, probably around the end of September into October. I have people booked already. I can't wait to get back to it. But in the meantime, I felt like this is the right time to launch my new series called The Good Glow Health. So it's a spin-off podcast and it will see me explore key health topics with a variety of health experts and healthcare professionals. So the aim is to make often complicated topics accessible for us all, easy to understand and actionable. So myself and Jamie were sitting at our kitchen table a few months ago and he said, Georgie, you get so many messages from people asking you to cover health topics and I think you should do a podcast on fertility. And I said, I just think that's a different podcast to The Good Glow because the Good Glow is stories of overcoming and personal stories. So we came up with The Good Glow Health that day. And on this podcast, I will talk to healthcare professionals. So I'll be talking about gut health, sleep, fertility, skin, children's health, relationships. It's all on this season of the podcast. As I said, it's launching on August 17th. And the idea was, I suppose I wanted to bust some myths. I wanted to remove the jargon. I wanted to open the conversation. And I was really excited to get recording this season. I have been over the last couple of weeks and I have learned so much already. So I'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek. The first episode is with Dr. Darren O'Leary and it's about general well-being. So all those questions that we forget to ask our GP when we go in to their office. So the importance of vitamin D, how we can protect ourselves this winter against COVID-19 and the flu, how we should prepare for the upcoming winter, and then things like smear tests, breast check. We talk about nutrition, we talk about prostate and testicular cancer and when we should be encouraging our other halves to check for that, and the men in our lives. It's general well-being. We talk about children's health in that podcast too. So that will be first. And then we'll go into lots of other topics. So I'll play you the trailer now. I've been bursting to tell you about it. So here it is. This is The Good Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. Talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, fertility, nutrition, gut health, and many more as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered that creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I created this podcast to educate, open minds, and guide us on our health journey. So that's the Good Glow Health, released on August 17th. And as I said, I'm so excited to bring you that podcast. I asked on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago, I asked if anybody had any questions for me. So I'm just going to do a very, very, very short Q&A before we go into our Danny podcast. So I got a question. Do you believe what's for you won't pass you by? And this is absolutely something I really believe in. There was many years that I sat at my desk as the entertainment reporter for a radio station, which I loved. And I loved my job, but I just felt like, is this it? I wanted to do more with my life. And I often wondered what that was or what path I was on. And obviously getting diagnosed with cancer when I was 32 was so devastating for me. But as I came out of my illness and started focusing on this new journey that I was on, I realized that this is kind of what I've been waiting for my whole life, to prioritize my health, to put myself first, to focus on things that I wanted to focus on and not give everything to my job. So I got here, it was a hard road, but I'm so happy now every day and I focus on my happiness every day. So hang in there. If you feel like you're not on the right path at the moment or things aren't working out the way you want them to, sometimes you just don't know what's around the corner, and that can be exciting and scary. But I believe that the universe has my back and everything happens for a reason. Nearly most of the questions that I got asked were about mental health and how I stay positive. And I think it's really important to say that I'm not positive every day. I have some really bad days, and I have been having bad days over the last couple of months with COVID-19 and health anxiety, which I always have, but it's come to the surface a little bit more recently. So I went off on my staycation last week, but before I went to my GP for a breast check. I got my bloods done, and that gave me a lot of reassurance. So I think often going to see your GP or just checking in with yourself is a really important step. When I'm having a bad day, I always go outside, immerse myself in nature. And I think my podcast with Shirley Gleason really opened a lot of eyes as to the benefits of nature. And in it, she says that people, you know, on average, should be outside for 20 minutes a day, which is why I'm not in the gym or I don't exercise in my house. I always try to exercise outdoors because I feel like I'm getting a double whammy. Not only am I exercising, but I'm getting those happy endorphins from being outside in nature, and it really pays off for me. When will season 7 of the Good Glow be out? Later this year. I have a few guests lined up. I'm very excited, but I feel like season 6 was so good. I really need to work on season 7 and make it just as good, and really have some really powerful, interesting conversations and continue to kind of break down barriers and talk about things that are not often talked about, like pregnancy loss and surrogacy and Black Lives Matter and just things that are so important to talk about. My top podcasts are always Goop or the Oprah Super Soul Conversations. Sometimes I listen to some Real Housewives podcasts for a guilty pleasure. But if I want to learn something, I'm listening to Goop or Oprah. And the final question that I'll answer today is a question. Oh, it always kind of, I suppose, makes me think when it's like someone's looking into your soul. So the question is, how are you? And I thought, God, that's a lovely question. But also, I suppose, can bring up so many emotions, like, how am I? I'm fine. I'm really happy at the moment. We're doing lots of things as a family, and it's just been so nourishing for my soul. And Pia is absolutely thriving. She's starting Montessori in September. So things are going really well for us. I do feel ready for another baby. And it's hard to see everyone going on to their second babies or even their first, you know. I definitely have the longing at the moment. And that could be down to the fact that I'm healing from the cancer and the trauma, and I'm ready to look forward. But yeah, I'm fine. It's as I say, like, my family is so complete as it is, with Pia and Jamie and Piper, and we just have so much fun together. But I would love to have another baby. So that is just something, I suppose, that we're going to start talking about and exploring further. And yeah, it would be really nice to give Pia a sibling. So hopefully that is around the corner for us. Later on in this podcast, right at the very end, I've put together a little montage of some of the biggest lessons I've learned this season. So it's a mashup piece of certain thoughts that my guests shared this season. It's about 5 minutes long. It's a lovely piece, and I hope you enjoy it and get reminded of all the things we learned during this season of The Good Glow. So I'll hand it over to Danny O'Reilly now, Corona's front man. Myself and Danny have known each other since secondary school. Danny is a super guy. I think we were all blown away by his performance of Heroes or Ghosts on The Late Late this season. He's a really nice person, and I'm honoured to call him a friend. He's always supported me in my career when I was an entertainment editor, giving me the good interviews and making such an effort to pop in to see us and spin. And I really appreciated that. So lots of people had asked me to get him on the podcast because he's a deep guy, and there is two sides to Danny. There's the Corona's Danny, and then there's Danny O'Reilly. So it was really nice to get to know Danny O'Reilly a little bit more on this podcast. Honest, he talks about what it was like growing up in such a musical family. Of course, his mum is Mary Black. How sometimes the worst thing to happen to you turns out to be the best. And how sad he was to say goodbye to his bandmate, Dave McPhillips, who left the band last year. He says he questioned whether they should continue, but they saw it as an opportunity to grow. And I think that's really interesting, because sometimes some of the toughest lessons that we learn in our life are opportunities to grow and evolve. So their new album, True Love Waits, is out now. It's their sixth album. And Danny says they are excited for their next chapter. So here's our chat. I hope you enjoy it. And stay tuned at the end of this podcast for that little montage I was talking about of season six. So over to Danny. Danny O'Reilly, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you so much, Georgie. How are you?
Oh, I'm really good. And thank you so much. Like, we've known each other for years and years. And all through my career in entertainment news and in radio, you always supported me and you always gave me an interview. So,
yeah, well, likewise, you supported us.
I really appreciate it. It's so good to sit down. I can't even remember the last time we saw each other.
Yeah, probably a long time ago, I'd say, in some dodgy nightclub back in the day.
So many people have asked me to get you on the podcast. We know Danny from the Coronas, but I suppose people want more from you, and you're probably used to that all the time, people wanting more. But tell us a little bit. So how long are the Coronas going now?
Yeah, well, we sort of started playing music back in school in third year, myself, Noxie and Connor, the last surviving members of the Coronas. And yeah, we became the Coronas probably 2006, 2007, released our first album, and we've had five albums. And yeah, no, we're very lucky. We have our dream job. It's funny what you said there about, like, Danny Coronas versus the other Danny, because I do, only in the last few years, I've sort of realised that there is two different sort of people there, you know, because I think if you let your job, like Danny the Coronas, define you, then, you know, the band's success will make you either happy or sad. Whereas I think after a few years ago, I had to realize that there was sort of two separate ones, like, you know, and there's Danny from the Coronas and then there's me.
Oh, it's such a beautiful way to put it. Tell us about, like, life growing up. You're from a showbiz family. I'm sure you're sick of getting asked questions about your mum, but I remember when I went to Dingle with the lads once, and I remember we were down there and you have a holiday home there, and we got into a taxi and you just said, "We're going to Mary Black's house."
Yeah.
And that's how they knew where your house was.
And it's still known as that. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, we still have the house down in Dingle, and actually it's my mum and dad's 40th wedding anniversary this Friday. They've been married 40 years, but they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Yeah, I grew up around music. They're obviously, and they're very supportive. They're deadly. They're two amazing people. And as sort of as I've gotten older, I've gotten even closer to them. And now we just hang out. Like, you know, it's cool. They're two of my favorite people in the world. And they're, as I say, they're so supportive. Never forced music on me in any way. Like, you know, wanted me to enjoy it. Myself and my sister Oisin are in the industry now, but my older brother isn't. Connor does his own thing, and he's QS, and he loves music, but he does his 9 to 5, and he loves it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I'm very grateful that I had a very good upbringing, like two great parents, and you know, I think the thing people always say, oh yeah, you're bound to go into music because of what your mother did, but I think it was more that I saw how happy it made her. I think that was probably the reason that made me go into it, as opposed to the actual music itself, you know, and it looked like a great job because she was happy. And I think also when we used to hang out, I always thought the same thing about radio. It's probably harder work, but I found that when we went in to promote or promote in radio, I always thought people who worked there seemed happy, like, you know, it seemed like a nice place to work, like, you know, maybe I'm looking at a rose tinted glasses. Obviously a band comes in and you're all going to be like, hey, how are you? You're welcome, like, you know, but so yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe down the road I'll get a job.
Oh yeah, now Dave from Today FM, I'm sure will sort you out.
Absolutely.
Tell us then, do you remember?
We're thinking about doing a podcast, me and Dave, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we won't be in competition with yours, don't
okay.
worry.
It's not about wellness and self-care.
It's not, no. Well, who knows what it could go down to, but no, we are actually thinking about, we've been chatting about it for years, and then we've missed the boat and everyone has a podcast except for us, but yeah.
But all your fans would be like, oh no, he left music and you went into podcasting.
No. I don't think I can do anything else properly.
So when you were growing up, when you were in school and tearing your college and you're going into like maths class and English class, like, was there this like feeling inside that you wanted to sing or write or perform?
Yeah, I think I sort of kept it quiet nearly. It was sort of cooler to be on the rugby team or I don't know. I think back then, especially, I knew deep down that I wanted to do music, but I never really said it out loud, like, you know, or I'd be like, oh no, it's just a bit of fun. And I never really, even though I think deep down I knew what I wanted. And it was only after, and then I went to UCD after school, and I didn't want to go and study music because I thought it might make me look at it differently. And I wanted to just have it as something that I enjoyed, and I didn't want like to learn rules about music and how you're meant to do things and stuff like that. So I didn't want to go study it that way. So I just went and studied commerce in UCD, but was barely there. Like, just went to the bare minimum and got through college, and so I could play music. But it was probably only when we got to maybe even a couple of years out of UCD that I finally admitted, okay, this is really what I want to do, even though I knew a long time before that it was the thing that made me happiest, like, you know. So
see, the thing is like, I remember you from school, you're always really nice to everyone, super nice guy.
Likewise.
Commerce, you've got brains to burn, and you had this talent of singing, so you're such an all-rounder. So when did you decide that, yeah, this is what I want to do, let's take this seriously, and where was your first step? Because I know Jim Lawless, a dear friend of yours, is your manager.
Still our manager. Yeah, and he was our school captain in school, like the you know, the year prefect or whatever they call it, the head boy. And initially we just sort of asked him to because I had been ringing venues asking for gigs, like this is back when we were called Corona or Kairos or whatever we were called before. And I'd been ringing venues and it didn't really sound very professional. So I just asked Jim, would he ring on our behalf and pretend to be our manager?
Right.
And he's been pretending to be our manager ever since for the last 12 years. So, yeah, that's sort of the way that happened. But, he's amazing. It's great to have people like that around you, like, you know, who have gone through everything with you and who you really trust. And I talk to Jim every day on the phone if I don't see him, you know. And so he's amazing. But like, yeah, even like, as I say, even when studying and stuff, I think I knew that I always wanted to do music. Like commerce was just something to do, like, while I figured out how best to do it. And I remember when we were in final year in UCD, we had a gig in Whelan's and we went down and there was a queue outside and we thought there was a gig on in the village. And then we realised that they were queuing for our gig, like, and we were like, this is crazy, you know. And I think that was sort of a turning point for us where we were like, okay, we'll finish out the year in college and then, so our parents are happy, of course, and then we'll give it a go. And we said we'd give it a year and see what happened. And you know, that was 13 years ago and we haven't really looked back, you know. So, yeah, it's funny the way it happened, but yeah, keeping people like that around, like, I think that's one thing that has definitely stood to us, the fact that we've been friends since we were so young, and myself and Oxy, our bass player, known each other since we were babies, like, you know, our parents are friends. So, and as you say, Jim of course has been there since the very start, so we sort of learnt as we went, you know. In the early days we didn't know what we were doing, we were sort of winging it and learning on the fly, and even that I think stood to us in the long run, I think, you know. And so yeah, it's been amazing, like, I, you know, I'm very grateful.
And tell us about then the first big song for you. Was it the San Diego song?
Yeah, I mean, we'd released a couple of little singles before that didn't really do much. But when San Diego, we went on J1 to San Diego and we had a great time. And we sort of wrote the song as a mess on the beach, like thinking it was just like a joke song, you know. A friend of mine, Macker, said to me, you need to write a song with the lyric, we refuse to hide in it. And so I was like, all right. And it sort of then it took on this, and we started playing it live and we could see people getting a reaction from it. And I was like, okay, maybe we're onto something here. And it's just a total accidental thing. And, you know, it was, we sort of released it and it got like tiny little bits of airplay. And then FM104 just started like playing it off the air, like A listed it. And we were like, this is crazy. And then all the other regionals and then the nationals, and then before we knew it, like, we turned around and it was the last song of the night in Copperface Jacks, like, and
wow.
We were there like going, yay, this is amazing.
Front and center.
Yeah, exactly. So it was definitely you know, total surprise and a total sort of fluke, really, you know, because it's only as we've gotten older you realize, you know, there's so many amazingly talented bands out there that don't get that little break. Because once you sort of, you can break through and you have a song like that sort of solidifies us in a certain way. We were able to tour off the back of it and make this our job, like, you know, because we were that band who had that song about drinking, like, you know, and it became a selling point and it was great and it gave us a foundation. But once you get your foot in the door, then they're open to listen to the next song and we sort of, we tapped into a student vibe again, totally accidentally. But I think because it was honest, we were students and we were, you know, having the crack and just going on holidays. And, you know, a lot of critics and stuff wrote us off and that didn't bother us. I think it probably, again, in the long run, it probably helped us. Like, they were like, who is this student band, you know, like doing their J1 and thinking that they're, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think, again, we were sort of just a student band, like, and it sort of stood to us. And those people have grown up with us, like, you know,
yeah.
And like, wanted to, evolved with us. And our music, I think, has changed over the years as well. And so it's been, it's been a mad journey. Like, it's only when I do, you know, chats like this where you actually look back at how things have changed over the years. Like, it's, in a way, it seems like it was only yesterday when we started, but, like, you know, like, we still sort of don't see ourselves as an old band. I mean, we've got 5 albums now. That's hard to believe. We still sort of feel like, oh, we're doing this, it's great, you know. But and like, we've been here when there's a whole new wave of bands coming through now than when we started, you know. It was Republic of Loose and the Blizzards and Bell X1 and all these bands that we loved, and And, you know, now there's a whole new wave of bands coming through, and we're still sort of clinging on, you know. And it's great, you know, we love it more than ever. I think we appreciate it more as we get older as well, you know.
I think, like San Diego Song, it was such an anthem, but you've gone on to have so many more amazing songs since then. But I think, like, people can relate to the lyrics. Yeah. Like, you've such a way with words. Like, talk to us a little bit about sitting down to write.
Yeah, well, I think I always liked lyrics that were honest and genuine, and I think that was one thing that I've always stuck with. Like, you know, I was never one for trying to wrap up what I was trying to say in a really, you know, thoughtful, like, metaphor, or, you know, making things sound a bit, trying to be deeper than we are. And, you know, and as I say, because that was the music that I was into, and I was always sort of wore my heart in my sleeves with my lyrics, and I think that's connected with people. I think if you're genuine about it, you know, the more personal you are with your lyrics, and like the more specific even you are about your own stuff, as long as it comes from a genuine place, I've found it tends to connect to more people. So the more honest you are, the more people actually relate, you know. Whereas, you know, I remember in the early days, like, a few of my friends would be like, "Are you really gonna, you know, sing 'We Sleep All Day and We Drink All Night'? Like, is that what you..." I was like, "Yeah, that's what the song is." Like, and I think back then as well, I had a certain sort of, I don't know, I suppose we were a bit more naive. There's a naivety to the first album that I think I almost look back with envy. Like, I'm like, of my younger self, that I could just, I was confident enough to just go, "No, that's the song, and I'm not changing it for anyone," like, you know. Whereas now, probably, like, I'd be a bit more, I don't think I'd be able to write a song like that now. Not just because I'm not doing that anymore, but also just because I probably maybe overthink things. I think as you get older and you get maybe into your early 30s or whatever, you start, you can be a bit more self-critical, and you start thinking, "Can I say that? Is that what I want to say? Is that cool?" Whereas in the early days, I'd write a song, and even if I didn't feel that way the next day, I'd be like, "Well, that's how I felt yesterday. It's no big deal. That's just the song. We wrote it in a day and that's it." Like, and it doesn't define me, like, you know. Whereas I think as you get a bit older, you start going, "Oh, am I okay to say that? Is that what I want to say? Is that cool? Is that, you know?" And I try not to let that be too, you know, too prominent in my writing. I try and, like, get back to that sort of writing in the moment and just how you're feeling at that exact moment and being honest about it. And as I say, that those lyrics are the ones that tend to connect to people the most, you know.
Yeah, because, like, you're almost like you're wearing your heart on your sleeve. You're giving us a picture into your soul. Like, is that hard sometimes to put it out there?
Yeah, I think I never found it that hard. I think that I realised early on that was my strength, nearly, that just being honest, and they were the lyrics that people were like, "Oh, that's a cool lyric." And I'd have people come up to me and go, "I know what you mean with that," or that. We were on a J1, that was exactly what we went through, and, you know, or anything, you know. And you know, Here's a Ghost was the song that followed up San Diego Song, pretty much. And even at that, like, people would be like, "Oh, you know, I know what that is like, and I can relate to that." And, you know, it's funny, then another theme that sort of became prominent in a lot of our songs, about not being too hard on yourself and sort of seeing things, trying to see things in more positive light, I suppose, and that's sort of connected to people as well, and trying to remind yourself, you know, of why you do what you love doing and stuff, and for the right reasons, and just sort of, yeah. I mean, music and songwriting for me is definitely, you know, it's cathartic, you know, it's definitely, it makes, you know, it's like my therapy, you know, and I use it in that way, and thankfully, it, you know, other people want to hear some of the songs as well. So it's not just for that reason that I write. It's sort of because, it, you know, it is, as I say, sort of like, yeah, therapy for me. And I think a lot of songwriters and you know, writers in general find that, you know.
I was doing a little bit of research before I came here today, and I'd read that you, when you spoke about being dropped by Ireland, how, like, obviously a very tough time, but, like, how almost the worst things that can happen to you turn out to be the best. Is that how you feel about that?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think the Corona's like our sort of ascendancy up until that point when The Long Way came out, we were all like real baby steps forward. Like we never had a major label, we never had like huge success outside Ireland. It all just building slowly, building up through the venues in Ireland. We went from playing Whelan's to, you know, the Academy to the Olympia to a few Olympias, and built up real every time we released a new album or a new song, you could see it just grow a little bit, and it was all just baby steps forward. And then we moved to London and we signed to Island, and they're the biggest label going, you know, the Mumford & Sons, Hozier, U2, and they met us and they were really excited, and we were like, okay, this is starting to take off. And then, you know, we became one of the statistics, I suppose, you know, like 10 bands get signed to a major label and you only hear about one of them and the other nine doesn't happen for whatever reason. And it definitely knocked me, and I think more so than I even realised at the time. It was sort of maybe like 6 months or a year later, and I realised I hadn't been writing, and I was a bit down on myself, and I wasn't sure about whether, you know, maybe we should just take a break from the band, or maybe we should like stop altogether. And it was actually, we came back and we did a show, we played Electric Picnic, and I got that live buzz, which is really the main thing for me more than anything, is playing live gives me like such a buzz, like, and it's like I'm literally addicted to it. It's the best thing ever. I don't like to drink or anything really before I go on stage because it clouds it. I just love it so much, being up on stage, like, and you know, the buzz of performing. So when we came back from London and we played Electric Picnic, and we could just see the reaction, and I was like, how could I even doubt this? You know, I've got my dream job, and just because it has, you know, we've taken a knock, how could I even think that I want to stop just because one thing has gone badly, like, you know? And I needed that, you know. And then I didn't know what to write about the next album after The Long Way, and I was like, you know what, and then because I was so upset about taking this knock from, because a lot of my lyrics had sort of been about sort of self-belief, like a song like Addicted to Progress is like about, you know, yeah, we're doing good, and it's sort of confident, and it's sort of like, yeah, we've got this type thing. And then I took a knock. I think I wouldn't say I had writer's block. It was the closest I've ever been to writer's block. It was more that I was trying to write, but everything I wrote, I was just way too self-critical of. So I'd write a little bit of music and I'd just go, that's crap, and put the guitar away. But like, you have to sort of sit through, you have to keep at it, you know. You have to keep, sometimes it takes you an hour of writing absolute crap, and then you might get one little thing of that you're like, oh, that's sort of cool, at the end of an hour of absolute rubbish, like. So, and I think I was just like too self-critical anyway. So after The Long Way, I was like worried about what I was going to write about, and I ended up, the only thing I could write about was that, you know, and that knock of the major label and the whole music industry and stuff. But I tried to not make it specific and keep it sort of about anyone taking a knock. And you know, again, a song like Give Me a Minute is about tapping yourself on the back and you're going, you know, you're doing all right, and you know, give yourself a break and, you know, do what you need to do to get through it, and you know, you're all right, like you're doing okay. And I think sometimes you need to remind yourself that, you know, it's like stuff you would say to your friends, like, but sometimes you often need to take your own advice as well and go, you know what, you're doing all right, like. And so most of Trust the Wire was sort of about that, you know, about going, you know, we're lucky we're in this position, let's keep going, we've got a lot more to give. And you know, so that was sort of, I used that, and now with the new stuff we're writing now, I can't help but write about, you know, our most recent, you know, event in the band, which is our guitar player leaving, and my best friend for the last 12 years deciding he doesn't want to be in the band anymore. And you know, it's hard not to write about it. I put it that way. Or even if I think I'm writing about something else, I'm like, sometimes you just pick a line that just comes out of you and you start singing a song, and that's what the song is about. And you're like, what did that line mean? Where did that come from? And it's like, oh, it's probably some sort of subconscious thoughts I have about what's going on, you know. So I found that, you know, good or bad, you can only write about what you can offer some sort of insight into what you're going through. And you know, like what you've done in the last few years about talking about your journey and everything that it changed for you, I'd say you were almost surprised about how much people were interested in your own little personal journey, because you're talking about very personal things and your own you know, yeah, your own journey, and people are like, wow, that's like touching people and moving them, and that's something, you know, to be applauded, absolutely.
Like, oh, thank you, know? You so much. Yeah, I suppose it's like you don't realize that it's because you think, oh, breast cancer, not that many people have breast cancer, but you just connect with so many people through like shared struggles, I suppose.
Exactly, yeah.
Tell us about Dave leaving. Obviously, you're still friends.
Of course,
you didn't
yeah.
kick him out of the room when
not
he told
at all.
You.
No, he said he had to leave the band to save our friendship. I saw him this morning. He's in good form. He's happy out. He wanted a change. He wasn't enjoying it anymore. You know, and you know. It's like, I suppose it's like a relationship. He even said it to me. It's sort of like if one person in a relationship isn't really happy, you know, it has an effect on everyone. And he even said, he goes, I'm not happy. And I feel like my negative vibe of me not being happy in the band is like dragging yous down. And I don't want to do that to you guys. Like, and I thought that was very selfless of him, you know. And he was like, I don't want to be unhappy in something that you guys love. And I'm just doing it because I've always done it, you know. And don't get me wrong, I know he enjoyed it. He loved every second of it, like, and but he seems happy now. He wanted to change. It wasn't really fulfilling him, and he wanted to go back to college and do other things, and yeah, he's happy out, like, he just
wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I've chatted to a lot of musicians about it since, and you know, people, even though I love my job, every second of it, and I think I'm very lucky and I think it's the best job in the world, but it's not for everyone, like, you know. And it can be hard, and you don't have structure, you know. There's, you could be away for months on end. You might be missing, you know, your parents' birthdays or weddings, or, you know, and even good friends of ours have gotten married, and we've been like, sorry, we're away. But not just things like that, but just the general life of touring and stuff. I don't know, it's not for everyone, like, you know, and at times it can be difficult, but as I say, like, I'm lucky because I love it, like, you know, and I couldn't see myself doing anything else. But yeah, so he wasn't enjoying it, it wasn't fulfilling him, he was sort of just going through the motions, and he didn't want to do that. And I think that was very, as I say, that was very good of him to look at it that way and sort of go, you know, I'm just going to leave, and I think you guys should keep going, like, you know. Because when he said it to me initially, my initial response was, okay, well, because he's one quarter of the band, or one fifth if you count Jimmy, like, I was like, well, that's it, that's us done. So if one person doesn't want, but it was only after chatting to the lads and to him as well, and we decided we wanted to keep going, you know. And the three of us wanted to, we still felt we had some stuff to do, especially because we were halfway through recording this most recent album, which is coming out in May. So we were halfway through that, and so I wasn't sure about whether maybe we just finish this album and release it and leave it at that or whatever, and not say anything about Dave leaving or whatever. But we realised soon enough that we saw the next chapter without him, and we could see that, and we were like, yeah, that could be okay. Let's do that, you know. And funnily enough, since then I've been writing more than ever, as I say, sometimes about it, and about, you know, because it's the biggest breakup I went through. I've never had a relationship more than a couple of years, so it's like a proper marriage breakup.
But that's the thing, like, life is just chapters, and yeah. I suppose are you good at trusting the process and just kind of just like trusting the universe is taking you in a
definitely
way.
Yeah, 100%. And I think only again in the last few years I've sort of realize that a bit more. And I think, you know, as you get a little bit older, you sort of realize what's important and you know what you want to give and what you think you can give, and yeah, find it, and just enjoying, like, I know it sounds a bit cliche now at this stage, but like, I honestly just like enjoying the journey, like, that's like, I honestly am, I think that, like, I'm just like happy day to day, like. And I was chatting to someone about it recently enough, and it's like, oh, do you not think, you know, do you not wish the band took off, like, in America and got huge and all? And I'm like, I do, like, in a way. And, you know, I still have ambition for us to continue to grow and tour. And you know, ambition is good. But I think if you put your happiness on something like that, if you, oh, you know, and then you're never going to be happy. You need to enjoy just the buzz. And I'm happy day to day. And I think that's success. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just being happy in my day, like walking down here from Rat Mines and happy out.
Yeah, it's funny because I was doing a corporate talk this morning and someone said, you know, like, how do I come into work on a Monday and I just wish it was Friday and I can't wait for my next holiday. And like, how do I enjoy the day-to-day stuff? And I was like, I think happiness creates success. So I think when you're like happy in yourself and you do things for yourself and you replenish your own well, that like Mondays aren't so bad anymore. And like you said, like walking in, do you practice gratitude much?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think I actually practice it other than just remind myself. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't, well, maybe that's exactly what it is. But I mean, I don't sit down to do it. You know, I've started doing things that I never really did before. Like I'm doing like yoga and I'm, you know, I do a little bit.
You've gone all Chris Martin on us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm so inflexible. It's embarrassing though. So I just do it at home in YouTube videos as opposed to going to a yoga class because I can't even touch my knees, never mind my toes. But like little things like that, I think, you know, I mean, everyone is different. Some people, you know, need certain things or use certain things. And I you know, like I play football and exercise like does something for me, like, you know, or, and like I have a certain amount of, I think, spirituality or whatever. But like, again, music does it for me as well. And performing, like, they're moments that I'm really grateful for. Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, when we have a big show, like we did a few nights in the Olympia Christmas time. And like after the first night, it was amazing. And the second night, like I went out in the first song and I was like, okay, I'm just going to be really present here for this whole gig. I'm not going to be worried about making mistakes or does it sound okay or am I singing perfect? I'm actually just going to enjoy every minute of it, like, and not be worried about anything, like, because this is like special, like, you know. Mm. So I've gotten more that, like being present and enjoying things like that and enjoying performing. And so I think there I have little moments of gratitude like that, you
yeah
know,
and that's such a gift to yourself, being present and just actually enjoying something and not worrying about like what's next. And
yeah,
and tell us about then like life on the road or touring. Has it changed for you guys?
Definitely. I mean, when we were like, as I say, when we started out, we started touring, we were just having the crack. We were straight out of college and we were, you know, we were winging it, like, and we loved it and we had loads of fun, loads of partying. And, you know, we were never ones for, like, drugs, really, or any of that stuff. We would just have our booze and we'd be happy out, like, you know. But that has sort of changed a bit. Don't get me wrong, like, we still would have a few drinks and stuff, but it's not like, I don't know, I think touring now, the older we get, we enjoy it a bit more. We might be doing, I'd go for jogs maybe, or even when we're on the road I might do a bit of exercise because I just know it's good for my own head, like, you know. Mm. And I know that I'll enjoy it more, enjoy the gigs more, or eating slightly healthier, for example, or whatever. Like, that, those sort of things have changed as we've gotten older. And again, like, not like all consuming in that no alcohol on the road or no bad food on the road, or, you know, I have to go to a gym today or like I'm going to be a diva. No, I'm a diva about other things, but not that. But so yeah, just like little things, just checking in with ourselves as opposed to, and it, again, as we were saying, like, it's sort of like a bit of a natural evolving of just us growing, like, a bit. And as I say, getting into our 30s and sort of just, yeah, getting a bit older. And you know, Noxie and Connor are married now, and Noxie, of course, has a new baby. And, you know, so it's funny that those things sort of give you perspective as well and you know, change it, like, you know, and you can see the change in him for the better, I think, you know. So, yeah, I think just we never sat down and said, OK, we need to decide what we're going to do in this tour, find loads of structure, or, you know, I think everyone has their own way of getting through things. Mm. And I think, yeah, just as I've gotten older, as I say, the difference between when we started touring has probably been a gradual change. There was never one moment where it's like, okay, I have to, we're partying too much, I have to stop. Or, you know, it was just, you know, every tour we would just be like, oh, can't face the hangovers anymore, so let's not bother. Like, you know.
And is there a difference between touring in Europe and America? Like, what's it like going on tour in the States?
The crowds are different everywhere. It's funny because we're at different stages in different territories as well, like different sizes. So, like, in the UK, we would play in nice theatres in London and maybe Manchester, we'd have good numbers in Glasgow or whatever. And then in America, like, different cities even would have different crowds. But, like, the American crowds are brilliant. I've found in the last few years, like, the industry keeps changing and, like, I don't even know what is going on half the time. You know, there'd be young bands asking me, what should we do to get into this industry? And I don't know what to tell them because the industry changes so quickly. And now with the Spotify thing, I can notice with our crowd, especially in America, that there's a lot more Americans coming to see our show that haven't heard of us, like, don't know that we have a back catalogue. That, like, I constantly, when we're on the road in America and we're, say, down at the merchandise stand after, and there'd be people coming up to me going, I didn't even know that you guys had a back catalogue. Like, you know, one of your new songs came on my Spotify playlist and I saw that you're in town and I just thought that you were a new band. Like, you know, it's like, I can't believe that you guys have 5 albums, like, you know. And so you're getting your music to different people, like, you know. And then, say, in Australia, we would do good numbers there as well, but it would be like 80% expats. Like, Irish flags would be out and they're like on a mad one, like, you know, and they're like, yeah, play Ears or Ghosts, but it has to be Osqueelga, you know, and they're on each other's shoulders and they're going mad. And that's great too, but it's sort of, as I say, it's more, I find, like, the further you go from Ireland, the more people miss Ireland and feel more Irish nearly, like, you know, and they, you know, and it's funny, like, we before our last Sydney gig, I was in the bathroom and a guy came up to me beside me in the urinal. It's like, "Jeez, yourself, you're going on stage now in a few minutes." And I was like, yeah. And I was like, "Have you ever seen us before back at home, Rhett?" And he goes, "I know, sure, I wouldn't be into your band at all now. But gee, you came all this way. I had to come down. Everyone was gone." Like, and I was like, "Okay, cool." So you find that, like, when you get further away, the Irish, you know, they want to come and support their own, which is great as well. But yeah, I love touring America because, as I say, it's a lot more Americans. You know, you might just get the odd little pocket of Irish people who are shouting for San Diego song, and all the Americans are like, "What's that?" Like, you know, they just want to hear the new stuff, which is cool as well. So we have to change the set list for different territory, sort of, as well, which is, again, cool. Like, you know, so, but yeah, I mean, it's I love traveling, love getting to see the world. Like, so when we go to a new city, you know, I'd be just like, put the headphones in and go walk around and see whatever is around. And I love that. Like, I love getting up in the morning and just, right, what city are we in? Okay, let's just wander around and see the crack and then do the gig. And that's amazing as well. So we're very lucky. Like, as I say, I appreciate it. I love every second of it.
Do you remember a gig where you, like, almost got a little bit emotional? Were you, are you able to stand back and kind of take it all in?
Yeah, plenty of times. I mean, I was emotional nearly every night of all our shows in December because we had announced that Dave was leaving and he was still doing all the shows up until the end of the year. And so the crowd knew that he was going. Like, and there was a moment at the end of the gig, he sings a verse in one of our songs, "What a Love," and like the noise from the crowd, like, every night was like, and it was just like, and you could see him, like, being a bit emotional. So yeah, that was emotional nearly every night, knowing that was sort of the end of a chapter, as I say, with Dave leaving. And, you know, and I know he's going to play with us again, and it's not like, I said that to someone earlier, like, it's not like he's dead, Danny, like, he's down the road, like, you know. But at the same time, when you go through so much together, it's as I say, it's like a marriage being in the band with someone. So there was that sort of like, oh, this is the last time he's going to play the Olympia, probably, you know, with us or whatever it was. So yeah, there are some emotional moments. But yeah, all the time, like, I mean, like, playing the big Dublin shows especially get me, like, when we played in the Three Arena or the Olympia, like, and having all your family and friends there and you know the show's gone well, and at the end of it, like, there's just a buzz, like, that you just can't describe, like, it's just that, you know.
And do your family know, like, if you're, would you ever come off stage and your family would be like, "You really enjoyed that gig"? Do they, can they tell by you?
Yeah, they can. But sometimes, like, one piece of advice that my mother gave me, which was great, which said, even if the gig has gone terribly and you're not enjoying it, just sort of pretend like you are, because if you're not enjoying it, the crowd will sense that and they'll be like, it's something wrong there, maybe this isn't good, like. So you have to pretend that you are enjoying it. So sometimes I come off stage, I'm like, it might be just something small technical on stage, like I couldn't hear myself or the sound was crap on stage. But when you have a good crew and you know it's going to sound good out front, I'll fake that I'm really enjoying every second of it, and I'll come off stage and they'll be like, God, you look like you enjoyed that one. And I'll be like, not really actually, but yeah, I'm glad that you thought I did, you know. But I think, yeah, they probably can't tell though. They can tell when I'm really genuinely loving it and on form. And it's funny, even I think that it sort of, it goes along with if you're in a bad sort of mental state in your life, or if you're going through a tough time for whatever reason, I think that can have an effect on your performance as well. And not that people would be saying to me after a gig going, are you all right, because you didn't seem great out there? But it's almost after, they're like, God, you're in great form now. Like, were you okay last year when you did that gig?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You didn't seem quite the same. And I'd be like, actually, you know what? Maybe I was a bit down there, like, you know. So it can, there's certain things that you can't fake, you know. So it goes with what you say. But, I mean, I'm really lucky that my family are real supportive and you know, like, yeah, they would always be like cheering us on no matter what. And all the parents are, and all the families are, you know. We've a great little unit of the extended Coronas family, as we call them, you know. So,
and who do you go to for the truth? Like,
yeah, my sister Roisin is definitely the one, like, and she's brilliant. Like, so sometimes I'll send her demos, and you always have this thing where when you write a song, you think it's great, like, all of them. And sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Like, and it's hard to be impartial. And sometimes it takes time. You come back to it and you go, maybe it's not that great. But when you're writing it, you don't finish it unless you think it's like, oh yeah, there's something in this. Like, you know. But I remember sending her a bunch of songs. I think we were actually writing for the Long Way album, and we had like 9 songs, like, that we had done in Dingle in the house. And I sent them to Roisin. I was like, wait till you hear these. Like, and she was like, yeah, I think you can do better, like, you know. And I was like, what? But of course she was right. And then when the Long Way album came out, only one of those 9 songs actually made the album, so she was proven right, like, you know. So it's great having people like that around, where you can just go, listen, what do you think of this, honestly, like, you know. And they'll give it to you straight. So Roisin is brilliant like that. And likewise with me, she'll ring me about different bits of advice about songs, are also just about the industry and booking gigs and all sorts of stuff. So
you must be so proud of her.
I am. I'm proud of the person she is. Like, yeah. You know, she's amazing. She's really talented. She's just a great person, and I'm really close to her. And it's funny because there's 3.5 years between me and my older brother, and 3.5 between me and Roisin, and I'm the middle child. But that's why I was yearning for attention and being a singer. But yeah, like, when growing up, we didn't really hang out or get on or whatever, like, you know. But as soon as we sort of got a bit older now, like, I consider her one of my best mates. Like, she's deadly. And yeah, really proud of her, really proud of the person that she is. She's brilliant. Like, I'm really close to Connor as well, my brother. We play football together, and he loves his music. And Connor has two kids, 2 little girls, and they've brought the whole family together as well. So it's like, it's mad. Like, I don't know, I'm sure every family relates, but like, I'm just like, my nieces are the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Cute. They brought us all closer together, so it's cool that. And like, the youngest niece, Fia, came out on stage with the Coronas at Vicar Street. Like, she's only 5, she doesn't even really know what she's doing. She's dancing on stage and all. It's like, oh yeah, she has the bug already.
Oh,
like,
wow. You know, yeah, so you'll pass it on to another generation. Yeah, tell us about True Love Waits.
Yeah, this is the new album. I'm very excited about it. As I say, half of it was sort of written when Dave was still in the band, and then the other half we finished after Dave told us that he was leaving. And he still played on some extra bits, but we worked with some other people and some other guitar players and different writers and stuff, and I started co-writing with different people. And True Love Waits is a song on the album that I wrote with a friend of mine, Keane, who's in a great band called True Tides, and we wrote it together. And it is what it says, really. I suppose it's just about trying not to be cynical about love, like, you know. And you know and just, it'll happen when it happens, and it'll be right, and it, you know, And yeah, it is. So I'm in good shape and yeah, that's sort of what it's about.
So nice to get to have a
Absolutely.
Longer conversation.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't even let you talk. Once you ask me a question, I'm just away. Like, you know, there's
it was
no
amazing.
Stopping me. Like 10-minute answers. I'm sorry. I love talking about myself. So. Thanks a million, Georgie.
Cheers. So I hope you enjoyed that chat with Danny from the Coronas. Their new album, True Love Waits, is out now, and best of luck to them with that release. So over now to the biggest lessons that I've learned in season 6. I shed a little tear when I listened to this. I have learned so much this season. I'm so grateful to all my guests. In particular, my husband, Jamie, who shared his story of his MS diagnosis on my podcast earlier this season. And I was blown away by him. He spoke his truth. And I think he described everything we've been through over the last 8 years so well. He was so authentic and so real. And I really think it was such a brave thing to do. So thank you, Jamie. But enjoy this little montage that I've put together, and I will talk to you very, very soon.
He was called straight in to get his bloods, and I was sitting outside the waiting room, and I just burst out crying, and I was sobbing on the chair, and two ladies that were waiting, they came over to me and they were consoling me and they were crying. And I think I was on the phone to my I was actually on the phone to my mother, and I was telling her what the professor had said, and they had heard what I said, and I was just sobbing. My ma said she couldn't understand anything I was saying. She said, "You were just sobbing down the phone, I didn't know what you were saying." And the ladies came over to me and were just hugging me.
I don't know, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not going to pretend that I do, but I know small things can spiral into big things, and I just think to catch things early, to know what your options are with talking, to not be afraid to talk, to, you know, make an effort if you're feeling good to check in with people that are your friends that maybe you haven't talked to in a while, because you don't know how they're feeling. And I think we all, like, if you're feeling good, you have a responsibility to check in on people who maybe aren't feeling as good.
People, unfortunately, nowadays have lost meaning and purpose. You know, they don't know their place in the world, they don't know what their role is, and they don't have a sense of being connected to anything in terms of maybe society. So when they spend time in nature in a real kind of mindful and contemplative way, they feel connected to something bigger.
This footage coming in from Italy, and it was horrific. And I was going, oh my God, is this what's ahead for Ireland? And then I told my mum and dad, and they were a bit shocked, but they were like, fair play to you, well done. You know, you're well able, Terry. Like, that's what my dad kept saying to me. He's like, you're well able. He's like, well able for this. And I was, like, you know, and we are. I think Irish people are so resilient, like, you know, and Irish nurses, we are so resilient. Like, we just ran towards the flames. Like, that's all.
I have memories of a day that didn't happen. That's what's so jarring about it. And me and Thomas keep talking about it. Like, a song came on my Spotify the other day. It was what I was originally going to walk down the aisle to, and I just start bawling, crying, like sobbing, and it was just such a knee-jerk reaction. And I think I started having all these images in my head of stuff that didn't happen, because I lived the day through so much while planning it.
Kept writing under my post hashtag healing, but I wasn't alluding to why I was healing, and I hadn't said I'd had a miscarriage, because I felt like, oh, that's kind of private, you know. But people were like, okay, what's got, is she having a breakdown, is she? And then when I had what happened in February, I remember sitting in the hospital, Georgie, and being like, F it, what have I got to put up on social media at the moment? If I know I'm going to be inactive for 6 weeks, if I know I'm going to be going through this hell on my own, what is the point? So should I shut down the account because I'm going to be missing for 6 weeks? Or do I share the fact that this happens? You may not know what's happening to your body and it could kill you.
With everything that happened with, like, the murder of George Floyd, it brought up a lot of trauma for me that I didn't deal with when I was a kid. That's like physical and emotional racial abuse that I'd felt. I can't rest until people and we start to see change, because it's just time. Like, there's never been a time more so than now.
It's taken me time to find that voice because, especially in the past, whenever you say something, it's twisted as a girl in the media and the blonde girl on MTV and things be written about and you're kind of told to say nothing. And it kind of built up to kind of me feeling enough and to realise that it's not just about me, it's about other people too, and if I have a platform in any way and I can say something that'll make things a little bit better for not just me but for everyone else, then by God I'm going to do it.
So went back the following week, and the doctor, who you know knows about my history with miscarriages, just wanted to keep a really close eye on me, and he found 2 heartbeats. So I have all this actually recorded. I was recording the screen the first time around when you know, we saw the first heartbeat, and I burst into tears and I was saying, wow, this is incredible. And I've never got to this stage before. But then the following week, he says, yes, there are 2 in there. And you just hear me going, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit.
Well, it's not one particular thing that's got me to this point. It's, I guess, a collective of things. One, it's I'm nearly 40. I'm 40 next week. 2, it's World MS Day on Saturday just gone, May 30th. And I thought it was important to raise awareness for that, having, you know, got the disease. But also, I'm a lot more comfortable with having it than I have ever been. I'm a lot fitter, I'm a lot healthier. I feel mentally much stronger than I have since the day of diagnosis.
Mam said I went out the door and she rang everyone straight away and she said, is someone after saying something to her? And they said no. And I said, Mam, what was different? She said, you opened the windows on the way down, pet. And that broke my heart because it must have been so hard for Mam to see just a crack of air that something was different. So that was it. So I joined the gym and I never ever looked back. Every single day I've kept my promise to the bump that I might fail, I might go wrong, but I'll keep trying.
Just be rest assured that the time that you're in at the moment is the worst out of the whole journey that you're going to be on. That time of the unknown, the decision making, the figuring it all out, the coming to terms with it, that's the hardest. That is just brittle. So once you get over that and you start your journey and you get through your first operation or your first screening or your first mammogram or whatever it is, it all starts to sink in and kind of starts to make a bit more sense.
Yeah, so instead of almost trying to put a lid on it or saying, you know, oh, you know, you're lucky you found it or you'll be back to yourself in no time, you'd rather hear, I feel your pain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We are here for you. We support you.
Yeah.
And we are so sorry.
Yeah.
I think that's such good advice because unless you've lived a situation or it's happened to you, it's so hard for people to know what to say. And people always have the best intentions, I think. So I think by having these conversations on podcasts and educating ourselves and women supporting women, you know, we can make the world we live in a better place and a more supportive place.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more on my story, follow me on Instagram, Georgie.Bufford.